I call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:33 p.m. on Tuesday, March 30th, 2021. Present in the room today are Representative Thompson, Representative Carpenter, Representative Lebon, Representative Edgman, Vice Chair Ortiz, Co-Chair Foster, Representative Rasmussen, Representative Josephson, Representative Johnson, and myself, Co-Chair Merrick. This afternoon, we are going to hear House Bill 93, General Obligation Bonds. There's lots to cover in this bill, so I'd like to keep this first hearing fairly high level. We'll have the OMB, we'll have OMB introduce the bill and then hear from Devin Mitchell, our state investment officer, about GO bonds in general, followed by legislative legal about some of the legal issues with the bill. Then if there's time, we can dive into specific projects. Ms. Schultz, please come forward and state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your introduction of HB 93.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Caroline Schultz from the Office of Management and Budget. Thank you so much for having me here to discuss House Bill 93 about GO bonds. I'm going to give a quick high-level overview of what the administration was thinking when we put the GO bond package together and why we wanted to do a GO bond package and why we believe now is the right time to get some construction money on the street and take advantage of the very low financing costs. So House Bill 93 has a proposed bond issuance of $356.4 million total. That's $354 million in projects with another $1.8 million to issue the bonds. There is an associated fiscal note with the bill that's going to cover $22 million in annual debt service that will begin in fiscal year 2023. Like I said, we're in a period of historically low interest rates. The current bond interest rates are 2.35%, which are, you know, lower than probably in any of our lifetimes. I want to point out that one of the reasons we've decided to finance capital infrastructure is because compared to the low rates of borrowing, we return much higher rates on our savings. We project, according to the Callan projections, to return 6.25% on our savings. Financing these projects results in $273 million in additional savings over the long term if we compare the interest we earn compared to the amount we have to pay on our borrowing. I also want to point out that there will be an associated special election with this bill to be held between 90 and 120 days after adjournment, and there is a cost associated with that special election of about $2 million.
Thank you. Let the record reflect that we have been joined by Representative Wohl.
This second slide just shows the project totals by department. You can see that we have projects selected across a variety of departments, but the largest of which are in the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, where we've highlighted several road, airport, and port projects that we featured in the GO bond project list. We're prepared to discuss that project list at a later time in this hearing or at a later hearing. Thank you. I'd like to hand it over to Devin Mitchell from the Department of Revenue.
Mr. Mitchell, please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you. For the record, Devin Mitchell. I'm the state debt manager in the Department of Revenue.
I believe you're on mute.
What about now?
I can hear you now. Thank you.
Okay, I feel like a long distance or a cell phone commercial. So in the next slide, we have just a summary of the process for general obligation bonds and all debt of the state of Alaska in general. And this is a review for the committee. We shared this slide or something very similar to it at an earlier presentation this year. And so all debt of the state of Alaska first has to be approved by the legislature and affirmed by the governor or a supermajority of the legislature. And with general obligation bonds, you have the additional step of you also need to have the voters of the state ratify the issuance of the bonds. This high standard for issuing general obligation bonds results in the best execution and pricing of any potential offering that we might put out as a debt instrument. So, for example, if we had one of the state corporations issue a revenue bond that had a similar rating to the state's general obligation rating. You would expect the general obligation rating of the state to price in a more efficient, result in a lower interest rate than the state agency. There's only 50 states. There's only 50 opportunities to buy general obligations, a full faith taxing authority pledge of a state, and so therefore it carries a higher value to the investors than certain other lesser pledges. After it's if it is approved by the voters, then the state bond committee authorizes the specific terms of the various issuances. And Caroline referenced the cost of issuance of the bonds and an estimate that's included in the bill. And that's really a not to exceed amount. We have certain costs that we're going to pay only if we issue bonds, and our contracts are generally structured so that we pay based on the size of the issuance. So ratings are smaller fees for smaller issues, larger fees for larger issues, the same for bond counsel, financial advisory services, et cetera. On the next page, we have a summary of the currently outstanding annual debt service general obligation bond annual debt service of the state of Alaska. And you can see there are gradual reductions to that. We've had a debt program of issuing generally 20-year level debt service bonds. And so as those stair step off, because we've been issuing this general obligation bonds that are included in this table since 2003. In 2024 to 2025, those 2003 bonds drop off. And then in 2027 to 2028, you have a slight reduction because of the interaction between the 2013B bonds being paid off and the 2010 bonds debt service increasing slightly. But the general story is that we have a mature portfolio and it's able to withstand the additional debt service that's proposed by the bill. The next line is the potential annual debt service associated with the proposed bond issuance. And this is really if we were to issue all of the bonds immediately. And so we would have a sale as quickly as possible after the election could be conducted, and that would include the entire authorization, and that entire authorization would be eligible for 20-year amortization. The likelihood of that happening to me is probably relatively small. It's more likely that we'll have at least a couple of issues and that we'll have certain projects within the project list that don't qualify for 20-year financing. When you issue bonds on a tax-exempt basis, your amortization can't exceed the tax or the IRS's opinion about the useful life of the acquisition. And so certain equipment or other shorter-lived assets or improvements will have to have shorter amortizations as well. And so, again, it's just an estimate, but it's a reasonable estimate given all the factors that are going to come together for purposes of sizing the issuance. And that concluded my statement. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mitchell. Are there questions? Representative Josephson.
Through the chair for Mr. Mitchell. Mr. Mitchell, why did the administration not recommend $250 million or $450
million? Through the chair, Representative Josephson, that would really just be a function of the project list that was compiled. The one kind of interesting thing about your question is that bonds are sold in $5,000 blocks, and so the principal amount, the actual par amount, won't be able to comply with the bill, but we will, through structuring, wind up with proceeds that equal the amount authorized, even if it falls in an odd amount that doesn't it isn't divisible by 5,000.
Further questions? Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Mitchell, looking at the projected project list, I realized that the original, the bond proposal package was put together probably prior to knowledge of certain federal monies coming to the state that might be able to fund some of these projects in a different way than a bond package. But can you say that that the current proposed list that's there as a, that would be a part of the projects on, that would go together for this bond package, that there's been a review as to whether or not it might, some of those projects might be funded in a better way through a more inexpensive way to the state overall using federal monies perhaps? Has that review been done yet, or do you know?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, I don't know the answer to that question. That would be better directed to the departments that are going to be spending the money.
Ms. Schultz?
Thank you, Chair Merrick. Representative Ortiz, yes, the facts on the ground have significantly changed since we put the geobond list together. The availability of federal funds through the CRISA bill and the ARP bill have certainly changed things, and of course just the passage of time and some of the information that we have gathered from our department stakeholders and some of the community stakeholders involved in these projects. So we are happy to work with the committee and work with all of the representatives on the committee as to identify what projects are most critically funded through possibly a geobond project package or possibly through the available federal sources.
Thank you. And another follow-up question, if I may? And it might be for Mr. Mitchell. Obviously, you know, we're aware of the pros on proceeding with a bond package in this fashion. Interest rates are low, et cetera. The point was made that we make higher returns with our savings monies, et cetera. But is a negative aspect or on the downside, is it true that if we would go forward with a bond package, we, in the end, are tying up our resources for the future in terms of further indebtedness, further obligations when we already have an annual budget deficit? Is that a true statement to make? One of the downsides would be that it would further tie our hands in the future with available revenue, because that revenue would then become obligated. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, it is entirely correct that these payments will be made by future legislatures. It's not something you could categorize as an option. And so I think the state has, in our opinion, about $1 billion of capacity to issue general obligation bonds, and so it should be used judiciously. I think that's the attempt by the legislation before you today. Certainly, if there were other funding options that became available, it would benefit the state's long-term outlook to use those alternative sources rather than our highest commitment level debt. And so maybe there can be flexibility structured within this bill to provide for that. But either way, if it boils down to looking at the project list and ensuring that the projects are critical projects that are needed for the state and that we're willing to pay for them over the next 20 years.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Edgman.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I see so many questions involved in the sort of the, as you said, the facts changing on the ground here with over $1 billion coming to the legislature, apparently for discretionary use along with the executive branch, vis-a-vis a general obligation bond package that, you know, has my mind worrying with more questions than deserve the discussion at this point, because the answers probably aren't available. But, you know, just the sheer amount of deferred maintenance that we have out there with schools, with university, with DOT, anything that's government affiliated, there's, what, over $5 billion or so in deferred maintenance, that alone. And then you look at the need to jumpstart the economy and to get us back in recovery mode, and the construction industry and others who are starved because we haven't had a capital budget of any note, a state with state dollars, the so-called vertical construction, not just the horizontal construction that federal dollars bring into the state. But there's lots of big policy discussions involved in all that that are far beyond the scope of this meeting today, and I get that. And I'm not trying to draw out any sort of responses, but just to note that all of that has my mind really wanting to get more deeper into the topic. And then the other issue is timing. You know, the amount of time it takes to issue a GO bond, have the election, or I mean, have the election, get the bonds issued, get the money into the economy as well. And then I think about the workforce and the amount of construction companies in Alaska and barges out to rural Alaska to get, you know, and blah, 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 all of that stuff that's entailed in that. And I would just hope in closing here that the administration is equipped to be able to come and have that larger discussion with us. And then if the GO bond package is still a priority of the governor's, with $1 billion coming to the state, that you're willing to continue to push sort of on dual fronts, to incur debt to pay for projects that heretofore were shovel ready, but that may now have a different sort of targeted emphasis going forward. Lots of questions, and I think it's at this point a pretty good problem to have on our hands. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Edgman. I'd like to invite OMB Director Steiniger to the table, should he care for comment. Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Just a quick question regarding future funds that are likely to be coming, and if we were to take on some GO debt here, what would we be able to pay off the balance early if we had other funding sources that would allow us to do so?
Mr. Steiniger?
For the record, Neil Steiniger, Director, Office of Management and Budget. So if I understand the question through the Chair, Representative Carpenter, you're asking if we have, you know, some of these federal dollars coming in, could we pay down debt with some of those federal dollars? Is that the question?
No. Yes and no. We don't know whether the federal dollars are going to allow us to do that. I'm just supposing if they do, would the structure of the debt allow us to pay it off early?
Through the Chair, Representative Carpenter, I actually think the debt structure question might be better posed to Devin Mitchell.
Mr. Mitchell?
Yes. Through the Chair, Representative Carpenter. So the state, the tax-exempt municipal market expects bonds to be issued with a 10-year par call. So what that means is that at the 10th year, you would have an option to redeem the remaining outstanding bonds to either pay them off or refinance them. So essentially, the first 10 years of the loan would be locked in. And even though we would be issuing these bonds at a very low yield in today's market, something along the line of 2.3% right now, the coupon rate on the bonds is likely to be much higher. Just what the investors are looking for and how you get the lowest yield possible is by structuring your bonds with a higher coupon. So you get a structure that's called a premium bond. And so if you have a 5% coupon on a bond that you want to pay off early and it's not currently callable, it's very expensive to do so because you're going to be buying U.S. treasuries to pay that bond off, and you have to pay off the interest that's going to be paid on the bond as well as the principal. And so if you're investing money in U.S. treasuries at 30 basis points and you're paying 5% on a coupon rate on a bond, it quickly dissuades you from doing that. So when we issue these bonds, we should be very comfortable as a state that we're issuing them for at least 10 years or otherwise not sell them.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I guess maybe Mr. Steiniger can answer my question. I was just curious how these projects kind of came together. I feel like there's quite a disparity in equitable distribution of the money. I mean, I just added up projects that were specific to the Anchorage municipality house districts, and it was just under $13 million of the proposed $354 million, which is, I think, roughly 3.5%. And I see projects like the Houston Middle School replacement bond due to the earthquake. Anchorage voters took on the burden of, I don't know, probably $50 or $60 million of bond debt to replace one of our schools that was severely damaged in the earthquake. So it seems like some of these projects are probably more appropriate for the tax base in those districts or communities to look at as priorities. And the feedback I've gotten from my constituents on the general concept of a GO bond is that they can agree if, you know, we're taking out money and it brings down the cost of energy, or it makes projects more financially feasible for private companies coming and investing in rural Alaska to develop our resources. But a lot of these items seem to be kind of more deferred maintenance and maybe not the most appropriate when we're looking at taking debt to address the problem. So if you could expand a little bit on how the whole list came together, I would appreciate some understanding.
Certainly, through the chair, Representative Rasmussen, the production of this list, you know, one of the things we went into as we put together this list of projects was looking at existing lists or requests that had come from agencies in prior years, things that we couldn't accommodate in prior capital budgets. One of the things here is if we're incurring debt that we'll have to pay back in debt service is, you know, ensuring that, you know, as we're selecting these projects for the list, it's things that we would have done otherwise, that we're not creating new spending to incur debt, that really we're taking advantage of low interest rates to accommodate needs the state has in capital infrastructure. And so we looked at these lists of projects that agencies had brought to us in the past that we maybe couldn't accommodate this project or that project in prior capital budgets, and selected off of those lists. There are a couple projects like the Houston Middle School that are, you know, don't quite fit that metric because that wasn't from an existing list, but it was a need we knew existed in that community. The amount that we're bonding for here is to cover the cost not covered by insurance in that community. The regional equity is always a piece of putting together a geobond project list, but you'll never get it perfect. But it is something to consider as we're picking things off of these existing capital needs throughout the state, that we try to be equitable across communities, but also that we look at the wider capital spend that the state has in front of us for the fiscal year 22 budget, you know, both the capital budget as well as this bond package, and kind of take those in concert with each other when we look at regional equity.
And I'll just remind the committee that after we hear from legislative legal, OMBs can go through the list and talk about the specific projects. Representative Rasmussen.
I guess just a quick follow-up statement. I understand that, you know, regional equity is not going to be perfect by any means, but it seems like a major disparity that you're going to, you know, ask for $9 million for one house district and the entire municipality of Anchorage that compromises about half of the population of the state is receiving a request for $3.5 million, $4 million over that one request for one house district. $9 million for one school in Houston, Alaska versus just under $13 million for the entire municipality of Anchorage. And it just seems like there's a major disparity. So hopefully we can have more conversation about it as we move forward.
Thank you. Representative LeBon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, I will respect that. We're going to be hearing about the project specifically here in a moment, but a phrase was uttered that we should at some point talk about, and that is the term shovel ready. And what is the definition of shovel ready? And I looked at some of these projects, and Representative Rasmussen brings up the Houston Middle School replacement. Shovel ready to me means it's designed, the specs are available to bid on, and you're just waiting for the money. The Fairbanks Youth Facility, I don't know if that's shovel ready Has it been designed and the specs defined and we're ready to bid because we're waiting for the money? That's just my general comment. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Laban. Further questions? Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I guess this is a more general question, but since we're talking about this bond and capital projects and federal funds that are coming in, and there's a lot of discussion around here, or should we use the geo bond money or should we use federal funds? Has it been determined whether federal funds need to be appropriated, or can the governor use the RPL process again?
Through the chair, Representative Wohl, federal funds will require an appropriation to expend federal revenues. If you know, the RPL process obviously is another tool for an appropriation of federal revenues when they're unanticipated at the time a budget is passed. But we are looking to bring forward, once we understand the rules around ARP, which we definitely don't at this point, but we are looking to bring forward, you know, proposed appropriations to expend those federal funds.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Wohl. Anything further? Representative Edgman.
Yes, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So if we're supposed to get the guidelines, or at least the initial sort of instructions from the Treasury Department on May 11th, session ends, what, May 18th, 19th? So that means special session then, right? If what I just heard you say to Representative Wohl is accurate, that the appropriation responsibilities of the legislature needs to be invoked.
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, I don't think I'm going to predict whether or not a special session is needed here. You know, but once we understand the rules around ARP, then we'll be able to work on how that money can be allocated in the state budget. Whether we get those, you know, that determination at the last possible minute from the feds or sooner, you know, will dictate when we're able to take, you know, more specific action on where those appropriations would be most appropriate. But that does not mean that there necessarily needs to be a special session. You know, it's just the timeline that we're operating under right now. I think that would be up to the legislature at that point.
Well, if I might just...
Yes, follow up?
Comment then. I think all of that is code for $1 billion going through the RPL process by the governor, by the administration. I think the committee needs to be fully aware of that, because we're being asked to apply discretion towards $356 million, possibly in the geo bond package, but you've got $1 billion of money coming through the CARES, pardon me, the Rescue Act, relief package that may, because of timing, have to go through the RPL process and sort of go beyond the appropriation process in the legislature. And I just want to be very clear about that.
Thank you, Representative Edgman. Thank you, OMB, for your presentation, and Mr. Mitchell. For right now, I'd like to turn the committee to, there's a legal memo dated March 5th in your packet. And this identifies three broad issues with the bill, and we have Marie Marks from Ledge Legal to take us through those. Ms. Marks, it's nice to see you. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Yes, thank you. It's great to see you, Chair Merrick. Good afternoon for the record. My name is Marie Marks, and I'm with Legislative Legal Services. One of the services that Legislative Legal provides is we identify issues and concerns just to help you, the legislature, make informed decisions. My memo dated March 5th, 2021, outlines some legal issues I found in reviewing HB 93, the general obligation bond bill. There's three main areas of concern. The first relates to what is commonly known as the single subject rule. This has to do with a provision in the Alaska Constitution that requires that substantive bills be confined to one general subject, one general idea. Historically, the Alaska Supreme Court has interpreted this very broadly and has allowed very broad subject matter to be in one bill. But in recently, the court in 2010 did strike down, invalidated a piece of proposed legislation for failure to satisfy that single subject requirement. And so the concern here is that HB 93 lists numerous and very varied projects. The overarching general idea the governor identifies in the bill, I believe, to be infrastructure. And I just wanted to bring to the legislature's attention that infrastructure, it may work as a single subject, but it's very broad. If challenged, a court may find that it's just too broad to be permissible. Existing law, I just want to preface my comments today on the main areas of concern, that existing case law doesn't provide a definitive answer on whether or not the bond authorization in HB 93 is constitutional. I can't predict with certainty what a court would do if it was challenged. My memorandum and my comments here today are just simply intended to bring to the legislature's attention a few legal issues that raise some significant question marks. So as far as the single subject issue, what I would recommend is that the legislative record very clearly establishes how each of HB 93's provisions are related thematically, because failure to comply with a single subject rule could jeopardize the entire bill if it were ever challenged. The second issue that I identified relates to another provision in the Constitution, which limits the uses that may be made of money through the issuance of GO bonds, general obligation bonds. It limits those to capital improvements. And also these bonds have to be approved by the voters. But the definition of capital improvements, there hasn't been a lot of case law on it, but it means something that is permanent, really durable and permanent. And there's an open question on whether maintenance, especially ordinary maintenance or deferred maintenance, will meet this permanency required that is required to be a capital improvement. There is a chance, some of the projects, there's a chance that issuance of the GO bonds for some of the projects in HB 93 may be ruled unconstitutional if challenged, if a court finds that the project is not a capital improvement as required by the Alaska Constitution. But again, it's an open question. The Alaska Supreme Court hasn't opined on it, but it has provided an opinion that says capital improvements are things that are permanent. And it has given examples of buildings, school buildings, roads, and similar types of projects. The third issue relates to project specificity. There's two statutes that require general obligation bond bills to specifically identify the scope of every project, its location, and the amount allocated to the project. And the reason the statute is in place is because without this specificity, there is a risk that the bond proceeds could be used for something that is not a capital improvement and therefore violate the Alaska Constitution. And so my recommendation there would be that anything that is not specifically identified, I think there's a couple projects that identify just funds instead of projects, that the legislature list those out specifically to make sure that they're not used in violation of the Constitution. And going back to the second point as well, my recommendation would be, again, that the legislative record establish very clearly how each of HB 93's projects constitute a capital improvement. And that's really the high-level view, but I'm happy to take any questions if you have them.
Thank you, Ms. Marks. Are there questions regarding the legality? Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Just for clarification, Ms. Marks, is the definition of the permanent capital investment or improvement, does that require that it be a new road or a new building, or does that include repairs or maintenance on an existing building or road?
Through the chair, Representative Rasmussen, that's a very good question. There hasn't been a lot of case law, Alaska Supreme Court case law, on this, but in a case, the city of Juneau versus Hixson, the court noted there is no definition in our Constitution of capital improvement, and so we use the plain meaning of those terms. Capital is generally associated with value represented by real or personal property in some form with relative permanency. An improvement in the broad sense means betterment. So the court in that case gave examples of streets, bridges, harbor facilities, municipal buildings, schools, libraries, public utilities. Those types of things have a sufficient permanent character. There has been attorney general's opinions that have said that things like trucks don't have the required permanency, and so they generally are not considered capital improvement. So there is a question about whether equipment or those types of personal property would meet the permanency requirement to be a capital improvement. And there is an attorney general opinion as well that says bonds cannot be issued for repair of an existing facility like ordinary repair or ordinary road maintenance. as opposed to construction of a new one. So while the Supreme Court hasn't decided that, there is Attorney General's opinion supporting the idea that it has to be for new construction or perhaps major construction. The more major the maintenance and the more major the construction, the more likely a court would find that it is a capital improvement.
Follow up?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Ms. Marks, is it possible for you to make the AG opinion available to the committee for review on that issue?
Through the chair, Representative Rasmussen, absolutely. I do cite them in my opinion, but I'd be more than happy to. I know sometimes they can be difficult to locate, to go ahead and provide that to the committee.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative LeBon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And do you have the list of projects available to review if I ask the question about a project on the list?
Through the chair, Representative LeBon, I do have the list in the bill, and I do have access to the supporting documents, and I do think you have to look in those in total and complete picture of that. And so I do have access to that, and I would be more than happy to do a deeper dive into a project if you would like me to do that.
Yes, if I could follow up on that, Madam Chair. And I guess the reason I asked if you had a list on page 2, there is a reference to a statewide fire break construction program. And it's $20 million. Does that sound like a capital improvement? And then on that same page, there's a Fairbanks to Seward multi-use recreational trail construction. I guess if you're carving a pathway either for a fire break or for a trail, then that falls under the general broad category of a capital improvement.
Through the chair, Representative LeBon, just from the description in HB 93, and I did pull up the supporting documentation of the GEO bond project listing updated March 30th, 2021. I believe it's item 17, and again, it doesn't provide details. It just says statewide fire break construction program. So from that information, I am not able to offer an opinion. I don't have enough information to offer an opinion about whether that would be a capital improvement or not, whether that would meet the constitutional requirement or not.
Madam Chair, if I could just comment, I appreciate that, and it probably wasn't a fair question to ask, but it sounds like we're just cutting a pathway into the woods to provide a fire break, which I guess if you don't maintain that pathway, that fire break over time, your capital improvement might disappear. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Rasmussen.
I guess just kind of in response to Representative LeBon's point, I believe last year we approved money to go to a fire break construction program. I remember in 2019 on the Department of Resource Subcommittee, we overfunded what we thought we would need for fire suppression activities, and then we ended up having over $100 million in supplemental costs due to the extreme wildfires. So I know we increased our funding on that project, but I don't know that we went to $20 million, and I think that, you know, if we fund it the right way, it might be a good idea. I just don't know it's appropriate in a GEO bond proposal.
Thank you. Representative Edgman.
Thank you. So it seems the operative phrase is open questions, and I've not had the opportunity to sort of read your legal memo in great detail. But have you had the opportunity to look at previous bond issuances approved by the legislature and kind of benchmark them versus what we have in front of us today in terms of these questions, a single subject rule, and the other two questions you pointed out? I think where all this would probably take us, and maybe you can opine otherwise, is that no matter what package we put out there, there's always going to be some element of this open question aspect from a legal standpoint, given these constitutional parameters as well as statutory guidelines.
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, absolutely. And my job here is just to bring them to your attention. Ultimately, it will be the call of the legislature on what to move forward with. And also the purchases or the bonds will also determine how weigh that risk and decide whether they'll go ahead and invest in that risk. But I did pull the most recent ones that I saw, the last four. I believe there was one in 2012, and Mr. Mitchell probably has a better idea on these issuances, but in 2012, there was one with the single subject of transportation. There was one in 2010 with a single subject of education. There was one in 2008 with a single subject of transportation. And there was one in 2002 with a single subject of education/museum. So that one was, it had a museum funding in there along with education. Again, to my knowledge, none of these were challenged. And I think they pretty clearly fell into the single subject, a recognizable single subject. So that's probably that there wasn't a problem there. Did they fund, and they definitely funded, what would I call maybe regular maintenance or ordinary maintenance or deferred maintenance projects in there. Again, to my knowledge, they weren't challenged, but in answer to your question, Representative Edgeman, I think that in the past there have been general obligation bond projects that moved forward in light of this gray area. Again, the ultimate decision is the legislature's to make, and my services to you is just to bring these issues to your attention.
Thank you. Mr. Mitchell, do you care to comment?
Madam Chair, can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
And all of the bond issues that Ms. Marks just mentioned were in fact not challenged. And I would agree with her that there were deferred maintenance or regular maintenance. And as an example, I can remember one of the projects in Juneau was repaving mile 4 to mile 6 of Old Glacier Highway. So there definitely was kind of routine capital improvement type projects or maintenance in those, but they were not as varied in the types of projects as has already been pointed out.
Thank you. Further questions? Seeing none, Ms. Marks, thank you for joining us. Mr. Mitchell, thank you. Next, we're going to have OMB come back to the table and give us an overview of the projects on the list. Ms. Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, for the record, this is Caroline Schultz from the Office of Management and Budget. All members should have in front of them a spreadsheet with a summary of the project listings, as well as a fairly significant packet of backup materials. And I would like to start by saying that we do have some folks on the phone available to answer detailed questions on some of these projects, but not all of them. So if it is the will of the committee, if there are detailed questions that I'm unable to answer, we'll respond to the committee in writing.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I actually want to speak to the West Susitna Access Road, and so if you'd like, I don't know if you wanted to, you hadn't quite got through to that point yet, so if you had wanted to make a statement before I ask my question, maybe the chair might want to have me wait. I'm not certain.
How far down the list is that?
It's number one.
Number one. You may go ahead.
All right, thank you. So I guess just to identify what construction activity would be included in the project if it was funded, and if you would just speak to that, because I'm not entirely clear.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, I believe ADA Executive Director Alan Weitzner is on the line, and he can speak to this project in great detail.
Mr. Weitzner?
Thank you. This is Alan Weitzner with ADA. Through the chair, Representative Johnson, we are looking at really two phases on this request here for inclusion into the GEO bond. There is specific construction activity, and we're looking into ways of meeting the requirements for the capital improvement and project specificity. So what I would define here is that within what's being proposed is approximately $4 million that would be dedicated to creating an all-season road in replacement of the Frisk Creek portion of the winter road access from the West Susitna Parkway into the Fish Creek Management Unit. And that would incorporate as well a bridge access across the Little Sioux to that management plan area. Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
And I guess, and is this similar to the road, just like at Red Dog, then this, the Ada would build that, and then it would be, I mean, depending on how the funding goes, there would be a, like a toll road.
Mr. Weissner?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, that is correct, is that the current structure that we're looking at planning is under a private-public partnership structure with private sector investment and working in hand with the Mansu Borough for the development of the road. Would be a similar type structure to the Long Mountain Transportation System and also very similar to the Ambler Access Project. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not that familiar with the area or the road in question, but it's a toll road, excuse me, like to two other mines. So this is a commercial mining, commercial access only road with mining?
Mr. Weissner?
Through the chair, Representative Wohl, it would be broadly public access along the route, and that's in working together with the Mansu Borough and the requirements for the borough. The road itself is looking at broad access between Port McKenzie and the road network system to links across Little Sioux and Big Sioux, and then into the West Susitna area to the Yetna Mining District. But it crosses several resource areas within the borough itself. So the intent is that the toll or use portions of the road, meaning that what's supporting the financing, would come from the industrial access as well as agricultural access. But then there's other services that are being provided by the road, ultimately in fire retention, timber access for the borough itself and its properties, and then the public's access for recreational activities. Thank you.
Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just to clarify, the commercial access would be a toll access road, but for the public, for recreational, would they also pay the toll, or would that be only for the commercial?
As it's currently envisioned, that would only be for the commercial usage, which would be the higher volume traffic. And that also in line follows some of the structures that we have in place with the Long Mountain Transportation System and Ambler Access, where local communities, local public have rights of use. It's limited and controlled because of the commercial traffic that's in place, but they do have rights of use and access that would not be obligated to make payment for that those volumes as long as they are under certain levels of usage.
Thank you.
Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, my understanding, you just mentioned, I was going to ask a different question, but you just mentioned that the Ambler Road would be open to the public, and that was absolutely not part of the plan 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago, correct?
Mr. Weiss.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, what I was explaining with the example of the West Susitna is the local community's access to the infrastructure. You're absolutely correct that the road, Ambler Access Road, is not in any case going to be a public road. And the permitting that we have in place for the BLM and the National Park Service and ultimately what we're working with the state and private landowners on is a controlled access industrial-only road for the Ambler Access Project. Thank you.
Follow up?
Didn't sound like it. Is the, relative to this item, the Susitna, the West Susitna Road Access, is the Chewitna River Pack Rim development, is that part of the Yetna Mining District?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I can't answer your question. I do not know. We would need a follow up in writing with you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Lebon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If we're done with item one, I would like to move to item two.
Is that what we're going to, there's not any presentation part of this, we're just supposed to ask questions about age and stuff?
With all due respect to our presenter, I don't want to get ahead of us, but Madam Chair.
The intention was to have a high-level overview of the projects. So if we could start with that, it would probably be more time efficient.
Thank you.
Ms. Schultz?
Thank you,
Chair. Item number two.
Thank you, Chair Merrick. Yes, I am happy to move on to item number two. With the Department of Education, we have the Houston Middle School replacement that we had previously discussed, but as the committee all is aware, the Houston Middle School was effectively destroyed in the 2018 earthquake.
Representative Lebon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question was on item number two. The Houston Middle School replacement project is located within the Mat-Su borough, correct? Is there an expectation that the borough would ask property owners to bond this school in some fashion and help to pay for its replacement?
Through the chair, Representative Lebon, this $9 million that is in the GEO bond is reflective of the amount that will not be matched by the Mat-Su borough and for their insurance payout. So this is not the total cost of the project. It's just the remainder. Follow-up?
So to follow up, that there is an expectation if this were to be approved and this $9 million remained in a GEO bond, it would be based on borough voters voting to tax themselves to make up the difference.
Through the chair, Representative Lebon, I can't speak specifically to whether the borough voters will actually vote on either assuming borough debt. I know that this is the remaining amount for the total cost of the project, which may just be insurance payout. I'm happy to follow up with you. We do have Heidi Teschner from the Department of Education on the phone, but I don't actually think she'll be able to speak to the specifics of the borough ends of the borough side of the financing.
Yes.
So I'll get back to you.
And I appreciate that answer. I'm just wondering if the borough has any skin in the game. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Schultz, item number three.
Item number three is the Major Maintenance Grant Fund for Schools, $25 million project. This is something that Ms. Marks from Legislative Legal touched on briefly with some concern that listing a deposit into a grant fund or kind of a generalized, non-specific appropriation is a concern. The reason that the administration believes that this is an appropriate use of the GEO bond project is because there is a specific school major maintenance list that I have included in your packets. The school major maintenance list is developed between the Department of Education and school districts through a very rigorous rating process to determine which projects are highest need. This $25 million would fund the first six projects on that list, which I believe you all have in front of you.
Representative Lebon.
Madam Chair, I guess I'll look at the list. Thank you.
Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Has Department of Law weighed in on this item and indicated whether they think it may pose a legal challenge for the state?
Through the Chair, Representative Rasmussen, the Department of Law has expressed similar concerns as the Division of Legislative Legal. Like Ms. Marks said, there isn't necessarily very clear case law on this item. It's the administration's perspective, like I said, because there is a statutorily defined list and a process that this is acceptable. But if it is of particular concern to this committee, I think that listing out the specific projects from the school major maintenance list would be a good option.
Thank you. Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, following up on Representative Rasmussen's question, and I only know enough about this to be dangerous, but the Casale decision was, I think, the capital decision, the Moore decision about operating expenses. And I'm just wondering whether a litigant could say this was supposed to be borne by the state generally and not by the taxpayers or the citizens. That's sort of a red flag I see on item three. Has that been discussed at all?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, that is a good question. I don't think I feel comfortable speaking to that legal issue, you all don't want to hear me speculate on legal issues. I'm an economist, not a lawyer.
Thank you. Ms. Schultz, item number four.
Thank you. Again, with the Department of Education, we have the Mount Edgecombe High School repairs. The $7.9 million is for major deferred maintenance for the state-owned Mount Edgecombe School in Sitka.
Item number five.
Moving on, thank you. Madam Chair, Department of Health and Social Services, there are three projects with this department. The first
is the Fairbanks Pioneer Home roof and flooring replacement for $2.4 million.
Item six.
Also with the Department of Health and Social Services, phase one and phase two of the Fairbanks Youth Facility. This is the Department of Division of Juvenile Justice's Fairbanks facility. This $18.9 million essentially reflects a total rebuild of this facility. It's in a pretty bad state of affairs, and the two phases one and phase two that this will result in completion of that project.
Thank you. Item seven.
Also with the Department of Health and Social Services, this is the Palmer Veterans and Pioneer Home roof and flooring replacement.
Thank you. Item eight.
Item eight, $19.5 million for the Alaska Vocational Technical Center, or AVTEC, upgrades in Seward, Alaska. Again, this reflects major maintenance and repairs at the AVTEC campus.
Thank you. Item nine.
Starting with the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs projects, this project is $12 million for the Alaska Public Safety Communication Services System upgrades, or you all may know it by its previous name as SATS and ALMAR system. This $12 million is for expanding and repairing the existing SATS-ALMAR, or the new Alaska Public Safety Communication Services.
Thank you. Item 10.
Again, with the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, the Alcanta Armory and Arc Flash improvements. The Alcanta Armory in Wasilla is the backup location in case something happens so that J-Bear can't be used as the headquarter facility. But in order for Alcanta to be well-suited for that purpose, it needs some major, major overhaul and repairs.
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With this particular example, being that it, you know, we're talking about federal, I think we're talking about federal responsibility when you're talking about armories. Would we be, is it common practice for us to fund, provide funding support for federal, federally owned facilities like this armory?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, we will get a 50% federal match for this project. It's customary for a lot of our DMVA construction projects to get a considerable federal match. And with this program, there is a 50-50 match portion.
I see.
Thank you. Item 11.
Item 11 and item 12 are similar. They are both DMVA facilities shelter replacement and improvements. The first item 11, the Heaney Range shelter replacement, is like it says, the shelter is falling apart and needs to be replaced. And item 12, the Summit Lake structure, the foundation is falling apart and needs to be essentially rebuilt.
Question?
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The word range implies a shooting range. Is that what we're talking about here with the Haney Range shelter replacement?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, no, it is not a shooting range. It's actually, it's like a DMVA communications type shelter and thing. And I'm clearly at this point out of my depth on.
Okay, fair enough.
The project, I can get back with more information. It's not a shooting range, though.
Thank you.
Thank you. Item 13.
Okay, item 13, the last DMVA project. This is the statewide tower lighting replacement. This project essentially is just replacing all the lighting on the DMVA towers with LED lights for $600,000.
Thank you. Item 14.
All right, moving on to the Department of Natural Resources. This $2.1 million project is for the Arctic Strategic Transportation and Resource Project, sometimes known as ASTAR. This reflects phase two of a four-phased A-STAR project. The phase two is mostly geological and gravel survey work to try to evaluate the most opportune resources and best plans for transportation corridors in the North Slope area.
Thank you. Item 15.
Item 15 is the Fairbanks to Seward Multi-Use Recreation Trail for $13.2 million. Again, this was brought up earlier. It is our consideration that building a new trail or improving the existing trail functionality is a qualified capital project. There's a detailed breakdown of each element of the trail piece in your backup packets provided by the Division of Parks.
Thank you. Item 16.
Okay, here
we have Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to go back and address something, but are we going to have an opportunity at the end to? Are we doing full high level overview here? Or are we going to have some questions at the end or in the middle? How do you want to do that?
I think we can do questions as each item is brought up.
Okay.
We just don't want to get too far.
Okay. Thank you. May
in
I?
In the weeds. Yes.
May
please.
I just wanted to thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to go back and just address. I didn't speak up quickly enough on item two on the Houston Middle School replacement. I know the question was, does Matsu Borough have the skin in the game? That is an emergency. That was an earthquake damaged school. Matsu Borough did have earthquake insurance. I believe because Anchorage did not have earthquake insurance, but we actually got penalized by having to pay for not having the emergency money come in. Matsu Borough has paid for most of Houston Middle School already. And so not only do they have skin in the game, they have a lot more than that. And I just wanted to make sure that people recognized that what happened there was truly, I mean, it's truly been a devastating event for Houston Middle School. And that $9 million is just what's left over after Matsu got their insurance money and they've paid their portion and so on and so forth. So this is just a small piece of a big amount of money that Matsu Borough has already put out. And the kids are still having to deal with that issue. So obviously, I just wanted to get that onto the record. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Representative LeBon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if I could, I'm sorry and apologize for going back a little bit. But when I asked the question about monies, the $25 million for school construction, was that item number three, major maintenance, and you referred me to a list, and I looked over the list real quick. The list has some ranking of projects. First one is in Galena, second one is in Craig, third in Anchorage, fourth Cake City, fifth Anchorage. I only get about five projects down, and I've already burned through $25 million. So this list has over 100 priority schools listed. Is it the intent that that $25 million, if it's approved by voters, will voters know which specific projects are being funded by that $25 million? Or will that be determined at some future date, assuming that the bond package passes?
Through the chair, Representative LeBon, as the bill is currently written, were it to go to voters tomorrow, they would not necessarily see the list of schools that were going to be funded, but because of the statutory formula funding mechanism of the school major maintenance fund, it would result, like you said, in going down that priority order list. And I think that, though, you know, for full transparency and making sure voters have all the information in front of them when they do make that decision, I don't see any harm in necessarily ranking the specific projects out in the list. One advantage, I will say, to making an appropriation to the school major maintenance fund versus making specific appropriations for each school is that it does allow for some flexibility of funding. If one of the projects comes in under budget or one of the projects comes in over budget, it does allow for some, I guess, you know, budgetary wiggle room, which I know sometimes is the concept that makes.
And if I could, Madam Chair, just a quick follow-up. And not to dissect this list and not to suggest that communities won't have a stake in these projects. There's a project listed for the Eagle River Elementary School improvements, but it asks that there's a participating share of $2.8 million. So is the community of Eagle River expected to buy into this total of $8 million by matching $2.8 million of it, and is that a community bond question for the skin of the game part?
Through the chair, Representative LeBon, if we have Heidi Teschner from the Department of Education on the phone, I think she can speak to the exactly how the participating share versus the state share allocation is distributed.
Ms. Teschner?
Yes, I am here. Heidi Teschner, Director of Finance and Support Services with the Department of Education. And through the chair, Representative LeBon, so the participating share portion is the district's portion that they are required to provide on all projects. So it ranges between 2% and 35% based on statute. And so this is when districts apply for the and submit their applications for the CIP, either major maintenance or school construction grants. They are aware of the required participating share and have that requirement to know that they have to come up with that amount.
Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And along that line, if the school is located in an unorganized area of the state and there is no taxing authority in that area, but there's still a reference made to participating share, is it really 100% state funded, or is there some formula I'm not aware of?
Through the chair, Representative LeBond, the participating share can come from any source besides Chapter 1411 funding, so any kind of funds they get for school construction or major maintenance. So if they have any kind of local, you know, any other kind of local funding or other types of grants, nonprofits that want to provide funding to meet that share, that's an allowable in those unorganized boroughs.
And one last stab at this. Would the REAA fund be available for the matching part?
Through the chair, no.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A follow-up on Representative LeBond's questioning, but going back to line 15. Line 15 speaks about trail development in a broad area over a number of districts, and I'm certainly a supporter of access to public trails and those kinds of things, and if the state can help out with that, that's great. But my question is, because that education list, you know, we're just touching the surface with the $25 million, was there some sort of ranking in terms of, you know, we have this proposed bond package. What is the best way for us to use these monies? And can we say that the $13.2 million proposed to be dedicated to trail development is a higher priority for the state or for the administration than going another $13.2 million down on that education construction list? In other words, was that assessment made that it's in fact a higher priority to address trails? And don't get me wrong, I support trails big time, but if we have this ongoing list that continues to build, was that kind of pro-con list or analysis done?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, that's a great question. $25 million deposit into the school major maintenance fund, to your point, barely scratches the surface on the total list. This geobond project total list was put together with a lot of competing priorities in mind. You're absolutely correct. You know, addressing our deferred maintenance liability, which of course, when you consider all state buildings, is over $2 billion versus investing in things that will, you know, diversify and grow our economy, like this long trail project that we view as something that could really be an attraction for independent tourists, particularly in Alaska. You know, weighing those competing priorities is absolutely something the administration did do when we put this list together. You know, it's we wanted to make sure we had some regional diversity, some diversity in terms of timing, as well as making sure that we took care of our existing liabilities while also creating some new investments in areas of our economy that we hope to grow.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I guess a question for the Department of Education. With the GEO bond project listing, the Houston Middle School replacement state allocation of $9 million, does that have a required participating share, or does it avoid that requirement due to not being on the major maintenance grant fund list?
Ms. Teschner?
Yes, again, for the record, Heidi Teschner, through the chair, Representative Rasmussen, that project, since it's being funded through GEO bonds, would not have a participating share.
Thank you.
Thank you. Moving on to item 16.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Item 16 is statewide park sanitation and facility upgrades. This is about a $2 million project to the Department of Natural Resources Parks Division to overhaul and upgrade existing park facilities. A lot of them are, in fact, park restrooms, which is an important aspect of having safe and clean park services.
Co-Chair Foster.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So you've got $2 million for sanitation facilities in the park. And also on page 4, you've got about $17 million for Bartlett and Moore Hall restroom and sanitation infrastructure there. And I guess to maybe kind of getting to a little bit of Representative Ortiz's point regarding Village Safe Water, I was just curious if there was any consideration to adding more money to that, and there isn't any in this geo bond. And I guess to referencing Representative Ortiz's point, I think elsewhere in our budget, the governor's budget, he does have 10 or 15 million UGF, which matches, it's the minimum required to match about 40 million for federal money for the Village Safe Water project. But that really kind of scratches the surface in terms of the, you know, $1 billion or so need that's out there for both first-time service or some just basic maintenance and upgrades. And so just wanted to get your thoughts in terms of, was there any consideration to trying to maybe add some more to Village Safe Water?
Through the chair to Mr. Chairman Foster, you do bring up a really good point that the Village Safe Water match is in other capital appropriation bills. Specifically, it was promoted in the capital budget traditionally, but it's also financed through the AHFC bond proposal that we don't necessarily need to get into in this committee. But when we put this list together, we did think of it holistically in terms of all of the different capital appropriations across all of the different appropriation vehicles. So while you're correct, there isn't a lot of focus on rural sanitation in the geo bond. It is something that was funded in the regular capital budget.
Thank you. Item 17.
Thank you. Here we have with the Department of Natural Resources the statewide firebreak construction for $20 million. Again, this was a project that we touched on earlier, the construction of firebreaks. It is true that if you cut down trees, they grow back, unfortunately, but it is our view that that is, in fact, a capital project. There is a listing of the department's prioritized firebreak construction items listed more specifically in your backup packets behind the kind of more generic capital write-up on page 23.
Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I didn't see a list or even a description page for the line 16 statewide park sanitation and facility upgrades, and I was wondering if you had a breakdown of those proposed locations.
Through the chair to Representative Rasmussen, that does exist, and I also don't have it in my backup packet, which suggests that it maybe disappeared. So I will make sure that the committee gets that list and that project right up as soon as possible.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative LeBon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And on the firebreak construction program, how much of that $20 million is to maintain or return to a firebreak effectiveness of a prior firebreak? In other words, that maintenance had allowed or lack thereof for the firebreak to become overgrown with vegetation? Is there a division of that $20 million?
Through the chair to Representative LeBon, if you look at the page that starts after page 23 in your packet, that page is not numbered because it is the specific project breakdown. You can see that the first six items on the spreadsheet labeled Alaska Fuel Break Strategic Projects, those first six items are called out specifically as maintenance to existing fire breaks. So those would be projects where you are, in fact, yes, going back and cutting down trees that you already did cut down before. And then the rest of these projects listed out are new fire break construction projects.
Thank you.
Thank you. Item 18.
Item 18 for the Department of Natural Resources is the wildland fire engine replacement for $250,000. Pretty straightforward. It is just buying a new wildland firefighting truck. And Madam Chair, I do see that, in fact, I think our packet just got slightly out of order because the statewide park sanitation and facility upgrades information is just after the fire break construction program in our packets. So I did find it. So to Representative Rasmussen's question, that information is just slightly out of order.
Thank you for noting that. Item 19.
Item 19 is for the Department of Natural Resources, again, a wildland firefighting aircraft replacement. The department is looking to purchase a replacement aircraft for firefighting efforts. I do want to point out that in the project backup, the aircraft that the department, that it is listed that the department has prioritized as the Shrike Commander, and the department no longer would like to purchase that aircraft. They would like to purchase the Cessna. And if there are more in-depth questions about aircraft, I'd be happy to turn it over to the Department of Natural Resources.
Seeing none, thank you. Item 20.
Okay, moving on to the Department of Public Safety. We have two projects related to the Alaska Wildlife Trooper marine vessel replacement and repair. The first item on line 20 is $2.4 million to do some major repair overhauls on two of their larger vessels, and then some additional funding for medium-small class upgrades, and this is also related to item 21, which is replacement of two medium-class vessels.
Thank you. Item 22.
Item 22, so Madam Chair, if I may speak more generally to the DOT projects, if it's the will of the committee. With the DOT projects that we've included here, there are three general concepts. The first are road improvement projects, and those are all based on the State Transportation Improvement Program, or the STIP program. And we can definitely go through them line by line, but I kind of want to talk about the overall concept. We also included several ports projects, whether they're specific called out as, you know, community ports, or it's a deposit to the Municipal Harbor Maintenance Fund. And then there are also airport improvement projects funded. The airport projects were based on the airport improvement program list. And, you know, we again saw regional diversity and, you know, kind of looking for high need areas to choose these projects off the various lists from which we found them. But again, starting with item 22, this is off the STIP, the Airport Way West improvement.
Ms. Schultz, why don't we finish with the university, and then if there's any specific transportation projects that the members would like to ask about?
Certainly. Thank you, Madam Chair. That sounds like a great plan. If we move on to item 54, which is on page 4 of 5 in our spreadsheet, we have the First University of Alaska project. That's the Bartlett and Moore Hall modernization at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. That's a major overhaul to their plumbing and basic utility infrastructure for $18.7 million.
Thank you. Item 55.
This UAA building energy performance upgrade for $10.9 million. This is another kind of major deferred maintenance item for UAA, similar to item 56, really, which is, again, another large utility and energy retrofit for existing UAA buildings. Projects that would have to be done eventually either way through the deferred maintenance list, but we believe that the geobond, because of the magnitude of the repair and maintenance work for these and because of the ultimate beneficial energy savings resulting from doing this overhaul, it was a good place for the geobond.
Thank you, Ms. Schultz. Do any members have questions about specific transportation line items? Representative Edgman.
Yes, just a general question. The other day in the committee, we had a presentation from the department that I can't remember the number, but it seemed to suggest it was $320 some odd million through CARES Act and CERSA funding. But none of that can be used as matching money, I'm guessing, for projects in House Bill 93.
Through the chair to Representative Edgman, you're correct. Most of the money that we have guidance for DOT already, for mostly from the CERSA or CRISA funding, you can't use federal funds to match federal funds, you're correct. That being said, there are several projects on this list that since this list has gone public, we have either the Department of Transportation has been able to identify other funding sources, possibly the CARES Act FAA funding, or even some private match funding. So as this committee considers this legislation, I know that the Office of Management and Budget and the Department of Transportation are happy to provide additional detailed information specific to the DOT projects that perhaps there are better funding opportunities for those somewhere else.
Thank you. So I guess that what I'm hearing you saying is then that the DOT projects in this list could be a bit fluid. Is that?
Through the chair, I think that's I think fluid is a great characterization.
Thank you, Representative Ortiz.
And as a specific follow-up on that same topic, I recall some FAA CARES funds that are unencumbered that I think the subcommittee recommended that we perhaps use some of those resources for rural airports, and I'm seeing Bethel Cordova airport projects. Would those fall into the category of perhaps being since identified by DOT as maybe we could find resources in other areas rather than a bond package?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, that you're correct, and those two specifically are actually would be great to fund through other funding sources.
Thank you. Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I guess just maybe speculating, I think that utilizing the federal match obviously is should be a goal, I think, of our legislature. And it looked like out of all of the projects on here, it was just over $110 million roughly of state projects that would receive just over $1 billion in federal federal dollars, I guess, with state match. So I don't know that the most appropriate use of our state resources is to use these projects in a GO bond, but I do think it would be beneficial to have some conversations with Department of Transportation specifically on their items and get a better grasp and understanding of what fund sources we may be looking at and possibly how we can maximize our federal match dollars.
Thank you, Representative Rasmussen. Anything further? Representative Johnson.
Thank you. This is just a quick note in reference to going back to the Houston High School, because I want to get some information out there. The Houston High School was a pro, and my goal isn't to pit one project against another, one district against another. I just want to, and I don't think that that's appropriate, but what I do want to do is just get this on the record, just on what the Mat-Su School District has had to do. First of all, they built the Houston High School, and then it was completely damaged beyond repair in the earthquake. And so it was a $35 million total project cost. Mat-Su Borough has funded $25 million. Some of that has been from insurance, because they did carry earthquake insurance. So they have $25 million into the project already. So clear, that is the replacement project, not the original school that they also funded. So just to get that on the record, clearly that's a urgent and a need and concern. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Anything further? Thank you, Ms. Schultz. Next, we'll hear an overview of the fiscal notes. The first fiscal note will be provided by Gail Funimiai of the Division of Elections. I'm not seeing her online. We will move on to Connor Bell from Legislative Finance. Mr. Bell, could you go over the fiscal notes for us?
For the record, this is Connor Bell with Legislative Finance. And there are two fiscal notes for this bill. The first is from the Office of the Governor, Division of Elections. The fiscal note estimates the cost of administering a special election at about $2 million or $1.995 million. Half of that amount would be an FY21 supplemental, and the other half would be an FY22 appropriation. The special election, according to the bill language, is to be held 90 to 120 days after the end of the regular session, which would put the election in late August or July. The second fiscal note is from the Department of Revenue's Treasury Division for the cost of the bonding. Mr. Mitchell spoke to a lot of this earlier. They estimate about $1.8 million in associated costs, such as costs from ratings agencies, bond counsel attorneys, and marketing. And then beginning in FY22, the estimated payments would be about $22 million per year. As Mr. Mitchell noted, the fiscal note assumes a single bond sale. However, due to different amortization schedules, there may have to be multiple bonds scheduled. And the fiscal note also mentions that not all projects may be eligible for tax-exempt status. Therefore, some projects may be subject to the alternative minimum tax, in which case they may have to be a separate series of bonds.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. Any questions on the fiscal notes? Representative Edgman.
Thank you. In order to do a statewide election, and this question may have to be addressed sort of separately, but first off, I guess on the elections fiscal note, to me, 90 days, 120 days is late August and late September for an election, as opposed to late July and late August, and maybe I'm reading that inaccurately. But wouldn't maybe a question for the representative from OMB, where's the money going to come from for the administration to promote this? I mean, it seemed like that would take some kind of a campaign, some kind of an advertising, messaging, whatever it might be. I don't see that addressed in any of the fiscal notes. Is that somewhere else in the capital operating budget?
Ms. Schultz?
For the record, this is Caroline Schultz from the Office of Management and Budget. Through the chair to Representative Edgman, we didn't necessarily believe that an additional appropriation was necessary for advertising costs to promote the election. There's ample funding across the governor's office for that kind of media marketing campaign. So it wasn't necessary to put into its own fiscal note.
Thank you. And I only brought up the issue because in late August, out in my region, a lot of people are moose hunting and are not even aware that there's an election taking place in September. There's still their hunting that's going on and so forth. And it just seems like the effort to reach out to Alaskan voters to educate them on why this is a good move, and particularly in light of $1 billion that's out there in federal government, it may take a few bucks to do that, and I just don't see that anywhere in the budget, and I think my question's been addressed, so I'll leave it at that.
Thank you. Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On that same topic, don't get away that fast. The bond of 2012, was that a special election, and did that one necessitate any kind of campaign? I mean, I agree with Representative Edgman. We have a hard time getting people to vote in our muni elections, especially when they're in like an October, and then the general elections in November, we have very low turnout. And if the only thing on the ballot is a bond, that might be hard to motivate people. So I guess I go back to the 2012 bond. Was it a special election? Was there any special marketing needed? I know you probably weren't necessarily key at this position.
Through the chair to Representative Wohl, no, I was not working in this capacity in 2012, but I believe that was during a regular election, not a special election.
Mr. Mitchell, do you care to comment? Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What would necessitate it to be on a regular election? We'd be finished too soon for that to happen on the current timeline? Is that the issue?
Through the chair to Representative Wohl, for it to happen on a regular regular election, it would have to wait another year. And that was the haste of having a special election, was so the bond package could be approved more quickly.
Thank you. Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just out of curiosity, we have a lot of money in the bonding package that has a federal highway dollar match included. if this bond package were to fail in, at the voters, does that put us behind on all of these highway projects? Are we going to lose a year because it didn't pass, so now we got to come back to a regular capital budget to get this money included?
Through the chair to Representative Thompson, we're actually already meeting our Federal Highway Administration match in the regular capital budget, so that isn't going to be a lost opportunity if we don't get the GEO bond approved or passed in this legislative session. Of course, that sometimes can bring up the question, well, then are we double funding the same federal match as the natural follow-up to that? And it's the Department of Transportation is better suited to speak to this, but essentially, no, not necessarily. If we fund these federal highway projects in the GEO bond bill, we're kind of tying up future federal funds for those projects so that it would essentially just bounce them higher up the priority list than projects that are already just on the STIP formula list.
Thank you. Further questions? Seeing none, thank you, Ms. Schultz and Mr. Mitchell and Ms. Mark. We appreciate you being here today with us. Any other questions or comments from the committee? Seeing none, we will set this bill aside, and this concludes our business for today. Our next meeting is Wednesday, April 1st, where we will be hearing the governor's appointees to boards and commissions. With that, at 3:04, we are adjourned.